It is Thursday, November 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Myanmar and Bangladesh sign an agreement on the return of the Rohingya. Australia calls on the United States to remain engaged in Asia. And new Hollywood films highlight America's struggle with racial relations. It's all ahead. Myanmar and Bangladesh have signed an agreement for the return of home of hundreds of thousands of Rohingya who fled to Bangladesh to escape violence in Myanmar's Rakhine State. That's according to officials from both countries. The development comes one day after U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said violence in Rakhine State targeting the Muslim Rohingya qualifies as ethnic cleansing. I spoke with Charu Lata Hogg, Associate Fellow with the Asia Program at Chatham House in London.
Well, essentially, the agreement seems to signature the fact that the Rohingyas who are now in Bangladesh are going to be accepted back in Myanmar, and conditions, we don't know what these conditions are likely to be, but let's not forget that the Rohingyas left Myanmar because they were fleeing persecution. Now, the Myanmar government is saying that there is going to be no more persecution. How are they going to settle back into Myanmar? What are the conditions of their resettlement, and where exactly are they going to stay? So there are a lot of unanswered questions. You know, obviously, the basic issue is that they fled because they had genuine and well-founded fears of being persecuted. And the fact is that they still continue to do not have any rights to citizenship within Myanmar. So is this issue going to be addressed in their repatriation? We do not know.
But I guess you could say that because Myanmar has signed this agreement, in a way, perhaps it's acknowledging that this is a problem.
Yes, but also this agreement has come in the wake of certain statements by the United States government, which have acknowledged and said that a virtual genocide has taken place, or what amounts to a genocide has taken place in Myanmar. The implications of international censure on Myanmar are huge. So is this agreement a result of international pressure, which will not have implication in terms of policy, is a different issue altogether.
Amnesty International has said, it just recently did a report on conditions involving the Rohingya in Myanmar, and it has said that it would be unsafe for them to return.
Absolutely. You know, I think we are being very quick to forget the pictures of burning swathes of forests, of women and children being abused and indeed torched alive. We've also forgotten the denial of humanitarian aid to these very people within Myanmar. The fact that access to education, employment, and indeed food was made very difficult by state policies, and the very denial of citizenship made their residency within Myanmar illegal. So I think we are being very quick to forget that when we see this repatriation emerge as a possible solution. It could be a solution. It could be a durable solution if indeed it was safe, voluntary, and offered those who were in the Rohingya repatriated community all the equal rights and which they are entitled to under international law.
Charu Lata Hogg, Associate Fellow with the Asia Program at Chatham House in London. Well, joining me by phone is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's going on this Thanksgiving Day?
Well, Thanksgiving is indeed the top trending topic throughout the United States as everybody prepares for their Thanksgiving dinner with family and friends. Right now, I just checked, I think all of the top 10 top trending topics right now in the United States are related to the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, something that's been going on for 91 years. Macy's, the big department store in the U.S., has held this parade in New York City, and it's a chance for people to get together and watch performers and floats, and they have huge balloons that go down through Manhattan and New York City. So that's getting a lot of attention. It's a Thanksgiving tradition for nearly 100 years that people have embraced, and now with social media, you can get real-time reaction to all the different performances and balloons. And then, of course, people are celebrating the food and looking forward to the turkey and stuffing and mashed potatoes, all the traditional Thanksgiving foods. But even beyond the parade and the food and all of that, we're seeing a lot of people on social media express what they're thankful for, which is really what the holiday is all about. A lot of people expressing thanks for family, for good health, from success in their career, all of those kind of things, and realizing, especially in light of, as you just talked about, stories around the world where people are fleeing countries and refugees and trying to find a better life, people realizing that they have it pretty good here in the United States, even if their life isn't perfect, it's a lot better than other people have it. So you have a lot of people recognizing that and celebrating what they're thankful for today.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Andrew, and very happy Thanksgiving to you.
So, thank you, Sarah. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Social media editor Andrew Palchevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. A suicide bomber kills 8 people in eastern Afghanistan. President Donald Trump thanks U.S. troops and touts his own accomplishments on this Thanksgiving Day holiday. Former Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe and his wife are granted immunity, according to sources, and Iraqi forces launch an operation to clear the last Islamic State positions in the desert. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOANews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A couple of years ago, the internet buzzed with news that a massive structure built by an advanced civilization of extraterrestrials might be orbiting a star located about 1,280 light-years from Earth. The erratic dimming and brightening of a star known as Tabby Star has stumped astronomers around the world. A new study using data from NASA's Spitzer and Swift missions as well as the Astrolab IRIS Observatory in Belgium rules out that an ET-built megastructure is the cause of the star's odd dimming patterns. Instead, the study suggests the cause is an uneven dust cloud moving around the star. Researchers say they found less of the dimming effect while observing in infrared light than in ultraviolet light. They add that any object larger than dust particles would show equal dimming in all wavelengths of light. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Amnesty International's chief in Turkey will be held pending trial. The Australian government issued a defense white paper Thursday that warned against U.S. disengagement from the Indo-Pacific region. It implies Australia will have to shoulder more responsibility for security and economic stability to balance a rising China. The government in Canberra said international challenges can only be tackled effectively when the world's wealthiest, most innovative, and most powerful country is engaged in solving them. Malcolm Turnbull is Prime Minister.
Now, our white paper argues that today's challenges require Australia to take more responsibility for our own prosperity and security. We must secure our own future. Now, this does not mean being less vigorous in upholding international law, let alone degrading our alliance with the United States. It means pursuing our interests as much in San Francisco as in Shanghai, and always on our own terms. Our alliance with the United States reflects a deep alignment of interests and values, while never being a straitjacket for Australian policy making. Our friendship and partnership with China enriches our economy and society while not preventing us from vigorously advancing our own interests.
A Chinese foreign ministry spokesman Thursday criticized Australia's concerns about territorial disputes in the South China Sea, insisting tensions are cooling down and saying Australia is not directly concerned and China's Southeast Asian neighbors are correctly consulting and negotiating through bilateral channels. The white paper was issued just days after President Donald Trump completed a 12-day five-nation tour of Asia, including two regional summits focused on North Korea and trade. Brad Glosserman is a visiting professor at the Tokyo-based Tama University Center for Rulemaking Strategy. He tells International Edition's Victor Beattie the white paper clearly articulates Australia's view of the opportunities and challenges of a rising China and the risks of an isolationist America.
What's striking about this, I think, is that the framing of this seems to suggest that the rise of China is more complete and more complex. And I think that there is great concern about the inclinations of the Trump administration and the degree to which the United States will continue to be absolutely the partner that Australia has come to expect.
The white paper makes explicit reference to China's pursuit of influence to, quote, suit its own interests while warning the region is engaged in an open contest for the principles and values on which order will be based.
It is, I think, an in-depth understanding of the nature of the challenge that China provides to the international system. It's not just the size of its military. It's not merely the size of its economy. It is really about the beginnings of, if you will, the muscle flexing that comes with the emergence of a great regional power and perhaps even a global power. The articulation of norms of international behavior, the creation of institutions like the AIIB, initiatives like the Belt and Road Initiative, that suggests that China has designs that include intellectual designs that would offer countries, I think, a framework for engagement that just goes beyond coercion or enticement through money or through force. It's also important to recognize that Australia has been very concerned about the influence of Chinese money in national politics, and that there have been a number of alarming reports in the last few weeks about whether individuals are acting in some ways as spearheads of larger of the Chinese national interests in Australian domestic politics, the media, and in other affairs.
The white paper implies a greater toll for Australia in maintaining freedom of navigation with maritime disputes continuing to create friction. Are we having a peek into the future post-U.S. Asia security atmosphere?
I think what we're getting is a sense of the apprehensions that exist. The Australians have been very clear about articulating these positions even before the Trump administration came to power. But I think what's equally important in this is certainly the acknowledgement of the potential problems, but also the way that Australia is reaching out to other partners. And I think that there's a section, I know that there's a section, that discusses that relations with Japan, relations with India, with Southeast Asia. And I think that you're seeing a broadening of security relationships, both because of concerns about U.S. behavior, but also because that other partners are now much more capable and much more desirous, if you will, of a larger security role. I'm thinking, for example, of Japan, India, too, where they are prepared to partner with Australia and can partner in Australia in ways that they could not in the past.
Brad Glosserman said the white paper is a reflection of the way Australia is preparing for the competition between the United States, with its changing views on security and a rising China, which he said has different views about the nature and structure of the international and regional system. An Istanbul court ruled Wednesday that Amnesty International's Turkey director should remain in jail. The anti-terror case includes 10 other human rights defenders and is drawing increasing international condemnation. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
The decision by an Istanbul court to continue detaining Taner Kılıç pending trial on charges seeking to overthrow the government has drawn swift condemnation by human rights defenders. The case has become an international focal point of growing concern over the prosecution of human rights activists in Turkey. Andrew Gardner, a Turkey researcher for Amnesty International, criticised the court's decision.
Really, this flies in the face of all reason. There was a wealth of evidence presented that he was innocent of the charges. There was frankly nothing presented that suggests he was guilty. But despite this, he's again spending another night in a Turkish prison. He's already been detained for 6 months. The next hearing is going to be on the 31st of January 2018. Really, it's a pretty desperate day for justice in Turkey.
Kılıç also is accused of being linked to those involved in a failed coup last year. The Turkish Amnesty chief is the only person currently being held in pre-trial detention after the other 10 human rights activists were released following a hearing last month. Among those currently on trial are two foreign nationals and other leading members of Turkey's civic society. Addressing the court, Kılıç said he was being held in an eight-person cell with more than 20 people. The case has drawn international condemnation. Ahead of Wednesday's hearing, more than 70 leading musicians and artists from around the world called for his release in an open letter. Numerous international human rights groups and European parliamentarians attended the hearing. Critics say the case is aimed at silencing human rights activists in Turkey. But the government has strongly defended the prosecution, saying the judiciary is independent and the country is continuing to face an unprecedented threat after the failed military takeover. A state of emergency remains in force and a crackdown continues against those accused of being involved in last year's coup attempt, with more than 50,000 people being jailed. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. Racial inequality in post-war America and civil rights activism are prevalent themes in Hollywood films this season. Using gritty cinematography and A-list actors, directors such as Kathryn Bigelow, George Clooney, and Dan Gilroy shed light on the history of racial injustice in America and open up the conversation about racial tensions in the present. VOA's Penelope Pulu has more.
It's a war zone out there.
The film drama Detroit by Academy Award-winning filmmaker Kathryn Bigelow is based on the 1967 riots that tore apart the city of Detroit.
These riots, this was an anger that was building and was on a collision course in 1967.
Major American cities such as Detroit became the battleground for discontented African Americans facing unemployment and racial discrimination in housing and education. Bigelow focuses on a chain of events one night during the riots that led police to brutalize a group of innocent African Americans.
When I went in there, three kids had been killed.
No. So they were killed right before you got there.
Sir.
You carry a 38, right?
Police officers attempt to incriminate an African-American security guard who witnessed the events at the hotel and tried to intervene to defuse the situation. John Boyega plays real-life security guard Melvin Dismukes.
I need you to survive the night. He was an unspoken guardian angel to those boys that were there.
Police!
Detroit combines a cinema verite approach with taut drama. Weaving historic footage into dramatic sequences, the film immerses us into the riots as a pivotal moment of systemic racial injustice and repression in America.
My hope is that the film could maybe stimulate greater conversation.
From the inner city, we move to the white American suburbs of the 1950s with George Clooney's dark satire, Suburbicon.
Nothing like this ever happened here.
This is a safe place.
It was.
Like Bigelow, Clooney uses real-life racial tensions as a counterpoint to his murder mystery, which takes place in the all-white suburb of Levittown, Pennsylvania.
I could kill you, too.
A corrupt middle executive played by Matt Damon is getting away with a murder while the community focuses its attention and indignation against the Myers, the first African-American family to move into Levittown. George Clooney says when they were making the film, President Donald Trump had not yet been elected and the racial intolerance that surfaced in Charlottesville had not taken place.
It was in the middle of the campaign, and it seemed like it was fun to talk about and remind people that these are not new subjects.
Mr. Ramirez was told he was not under arrest, and yet he was refused use of the bathroom. That's a violation of civil rights.
You can wait and address.
In Roman J. Israel Esquire, filmmaker Dan Gilroy crafts a character drama that targets institutionalized racism through a corrupt judicial system. The story takes place in today's Los Angeles and revolves around Roman, a socially awkward lawyer.
Okay. Finding in contempt.
Played by Denzel Washington, Roman comes face to face with an overburdened justice system which disproportionately affects African Americans.
Everybody looking at you crazy.
Filmmaker Dan Gilroy says his story, like his character, is reminiscent of the political activism of the 1960s and 70s.
The story spoke to me on a very contemporary level. There are things going on right now, legally, constitutionally, nationally and internationally, that the story just became a focus.
Despite their different methodologies, all three films address racial tensions, but also the potential for racial reconciliation and tolerance. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks very much, Penelope, and that is our show for today. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us, and please have a very happy Thanksgiving.
An editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
On the fourth Thursday in November, Americans celebrate Thanksgiving. The celebration is rooted in the ancient tradition of the Harvest Festival, but in the United States it has taken a far greater significance. Although there are numerous regional claims as to where the first Thanksgiving was celebrated, the traditional observance stems from a celebration that took place in Massachusetts in November 1621. Those English settlers who celebrated that first Thanksgiving truly did have much for which to be thankful. Known today as the Pilgrims, these Christians were dissenters from the established English church. As part of their religious beliefs, they observed days of fasting and days of thanksgiving in response to events they believed to be special acts of providence. The end of a drought or of a plague might call for a day of thanksgiving. Intent on setting up a community wherein they could live according to their own religious beliefs, they sailed out of England on a ship called the Mayflower in September 1620. 102 would-be colonists and some 30 crew came ashore at Cape Cod on November 9th. Within a year, half of them were dead due to starvation, disease, and the harsh weather conditions of that first winter. But the summer brought a good harvest, and in autumn, 53 pilgrims sat down to a feast with 90 of their neighbors, Wampanoag Indians, who had helped feed and safeguard them over their first year in the New World. Although the holiday had been observed in Virginia since the first permanent colony was founded in Jamestown in 1609, modern Thanksgiving was first officially established in all states in 1863 by a presidential proclamation of Abraham Lincoln. The observance was moved to the fourth week in November by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Thanksgiving began as a prayer of gratitude by immigrants who faced death, who nevertheless came through and endured. Today, for many Americans, it is an occasion for gatherings of family and friends, a day to share a holiday meal with those who matter the most, and a day to give thanks for the many blessings of freedom.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.